Let me ask you something before we get going. When you climb up to cruise on a nice VFR day, how do you pick your altitude? Be honest, a lot of us just kind of settle in wherever the airplane feels happy. We level off, we trim, we look at the number on the altimeter, and if it's somewhere around a nice round 1,000, we call it good. I'm Pattern. And this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar, where we take the rules that got mumbled at you during your written test prep, and we turn them into something you can actually use in the cockpit. Today we're going to talk about one of the simplest regulations in the whole book. It's also one that student pilots memorize for the exam, use correctly for about 3 flights, and then quietly forget. It's called the VFR Cruising Altitude Rule. The regulation number is Federal Aviation Regulation 91-159. And the reason it exists is genuinely a little scary once you sit with it. Let's walk through this together. Before we get into the meat of it, let me say a quick thank you to the folks who help keep this show on the air. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, the ones nobody sees but you. aviationsoul.com. All right, let's talk about why this rule is even here. Picture 2 airplanes. One is a Cessna 172 heading east from, let's say, somewhere in Ohio toward Pennsylvania. The other is a Piper Cherokee heading west, coming the other direction. Same part of the country, same beautiful afternoon, both flying VFR, both looking outside, both perfectly legal. Now here's the problem. If both of those pilots pick the same altitude, say 5,500 feet, because it's a nice, round, friendly number, they are now pointed directly at each other on the same sheet of air. And a head-on closure between 2 little airplanes is not a gentle thing. A Skyhawk cruises around 120 knots. So does the Cherokee. Put them nose to nose and the gap between them is closing at roughly 240 knots. That's better than 270 miles an hour of closure. At that speed, from the moment one of those airplanes becomes a recognizable shape in the windscreen to the moment of impact, you might have 10 seconds, maybe less. And an airplane coming straight at you is the single hardest thing to see in the sky because it isn't moving across your windscreen. It just sits there in one spot and slowly gets bigger. No motion to catch your eye. Just a dot that becomes a dot with wings that becomes the last thing you ever see. So, the FAA looked at this a long time ago and came up with a beautifully simple fix. If we can't guarantee pilots will see each other, let's at least make sure airplanes going opposite directions are never at the same altitude in the first place. Stack them. Put the eastbound traffic on one set of floors and the westbound traffic on another. Now, even if nobody sees anybody, they slide past each other with 1,000 feet of daylight in between. That's the whole idea. That's 91-159. Here's how the rule actually works, and it's easier than you think. The rule kicks in when you're more than 3,000 feet above the surface. Below that, down in the pattern and in the climb and in the low cruise, you are not required to follow it. That makes sense, because down low, you're maneuvering, you're departing, you're setting up to land, and locking you into specific altitudes would just get in the way. So the magic words are more than 3,000 feet above the ground above that. In level VFR cruise, the rule applies. Now everything depends on which way you're going. And I mean, your magnetic course, the direction you're actually traveling over the ground, not the heading your nose happens to be pointing after the wind pushes you around. If your magnetic course is anywhere from 0 degrees around through 179, so basically you're headed east in any easterly direction, you fly an odd 1,000 plus 500, odd 1,000 plus 500, that gives you 5,500, 9,500, and so on. If your magnetic course is from 180 around through 359, so you're headed west, in any westerly direction, you fly an even 1,000 plus 500. That's 4,500, 6,500, 8,500. And here's the little rhyme that has lived in pilots' heads for generations. East is least, west is best. East, the lower numbers, the odds, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. West, the higher numbers, the evens, 2, 4, 6, 8. East is least, west is best. Say it out loud a few times on your next drive, and it'll stick with you forever. Now let me clear up the 2 things that trip students up every single time. First one, why the extra 500 feet? Why not just fly odd thousands going east and even thousands going west, nice and clean? Because the plane thousands belong to somebody else. Those are for the instrument traffic. The airplanes flying on an IFR flight plan in the system. They get the round numbers, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000. We VFR folks get the numbers in between, the ones ending in 500. So the whole sky ends up layered like a cake, IFR eastbound, IFR westbound, and tucked 500 feet above each of those the VFR traffic going the same way. Everybody stacked, everybody separated, nobody sharing a floor with someone coming the other direction. Second thing, and this is the one I want you to really hear, it's magnetic course, and it's only when you're in level cruise, when you're climbing to your cruise altitude, or descending out of it, the rule doesn't pin you, you climb through all those altitudes on your way up. That's fine. The rule is about where you level off and settle in for the cruise, so the question to ask yourself is simple. Am I straight and level more than 3,000 feet above the ground, going somewhere? If yes, then which way am I going? And does my altitude match? Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. This rule is your friend even when you're not required to follow it. Think about that. Even if you're down at 2,500 feet above the ground, below the altitude where the reg applies, you can still choose to think like the rule. If you're poking along eastbound on a cross country and there's no terrain or airspace forcing your hand, why not sit at an altitude that keeps you clear of the westbound crowd anyway? It costs you nothing, and it stacks the deck in your favor in exactly the situation where you'd least expect trouble, on a clear, calm day when everybody's guard is down. Because that's the thing about mid-airs. They almost never happen in bad weather. They happen on the gorgeous, severe, clear afternoons when the flying is easy and everybody's out. They happen near airports. And they happen on those popular cross-country routes where the good VFR days funnel everybody down the same valleys and along the same shorelines and over the same checkpoints. The nice days are the busy days. Let me give you a real scenario, the kind of thing that plays out constantly. You're planning a cross-country. Let's say you're flying from an airport out to one about 80 miles to the northeast for a $100 hamburger, or these days more like a $200 hamburger the way things are going. You plot your course on the chart and it comes out to, let's say, 05, 5 degrees. That's a magnetic course of 55 degrees. Northeast, that falls in the easterly half 0 through 179. So east is least odd plus 500. You've got choices, 5500, 7500, 9500 depending on terrain and winds and how high you feel like climbing. Now on the way home you turn around, your course is now the reciprocal, about 235 degrees, that's in the westerly half, west is best even plus 500. So maybe you come home at 4500 or 6500. You see what happened there? Same route, out and back, but you flew home at a different altitude than you flew out. That is exactly the point the airplanes coming at you are, by the rule, 1,000 feet away. And if you'd stubbornly flown the same altitude both directions, you'd have been swimming upstream against every airplane doing the same trip you just did. Now let me throw the wrinkle at you, because the ACS examiner might, and because the real sky is full of wrinkles. What about a course that's almost exactly north, or almost exactly south? What happens right at the boundary? Due east, 90 degrees, easy, that's easterly odd. Due west, 270, easy, that's westerly even. But what about a course of due south, 180? By the rule, 180 falls into the westerly bucket, 180 through 359, so you'd fly even plus 500, and due north, well, 0 or 360, north sits at the very edge. North and eastbound generally get lumped together as the odd side, but honestly, right at those cardinal boundaries, I don't want you sweating the exact half degree. If your course is dead north or dead south, use good judgment. Pick the appropriate side. And here's the real lesson. Keep your eyes outside. Because near those boundaries, you may well have traffic that's legally at your altitude coming from an angle. The rule protects you best from the head-on threat. It does not replace looking out the window. It never did. That's the part I really want to land for you today. 91-159 is not a force field. It's a system that works beautifully as long as everybody plays along, but not everybody's above 3,000 feet. Not everybody remembers the rule, not everybody's even required to follow it because they're down low or maneuvering or on a local flight. And plenty of perfectly legal traffic will be crossing your path at an angle, at your exact altitude, with every right to be there. So the altitude rule handles the head-on geometry, the worst and hardest to see case, and then you handle everything else with your eyeballs and a good scan. Nose a little low every so often to clear the area under it. Look, don't just stare, move your eyes in sections across the windscreen and give them a beat to actually focus on each chunk of sky and clear before every turn. Two systems working together. The rule stacks the traffic, your scan catches what the rule can't. Let me leave you with the practical takeaway, the thing to do on your very next flight. When you're building your cross-country plan, don't pick your cruising altitude last as an afterthought. Once you're already droning along fat and happy, pick it when you plot your course. Look at your magnetic course line. Ask east or west, say the little rhyme. East is least, west is best, and choose an altitude that's legal for your direction. High enough to clear your terrain and your airspace, and low enough to keep you out of the oxygen numbers, and give you a comfortable glide towards somewhere friendly if things ever go quiet up front. Write it on your nav log, own it before you ever start the engine, and then on the way home, remember to change it. That reciprocal course flips you to the other side of the rule, new direction, new altitude, out on the odds, home on the evens, or the other way around depending on which way you launched. The examiner, by the way, is looking for exactly this on your check ride. Not just that you can recite the numbers, but that you chose your cruising altitude on purpose, for a reason, and that you can tell them why. Direction, terrain, airspace, weather, glide options, that's a pilot thinking like a pilot, instead of just filling in a blank. I pulled today's details straight from Part 91 of the Federal Aviation Regulations and the Airman Certification Standards, and if you want to read 159 for yourself, it's short and it's worth the 2 minutes. You can find more of these breakdowns over at radiohangar.com. So next time you level off up there in all that beautiful empty-looking air, remember it only looks empty. Pick your altitude on purpose, keep your eyes moving, and give the other guy his 1,000 feet. East is least, west is best. I'm Pattern. Fly safe, and I'll see you back in the pattern.